have found Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle stories and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. My name is James Kademan, entrepreneur, author, speaker, and helpful coach to small business owners across the country. We are underwritten locally by the Bank of Sun Prairie. And today, I am excited to welcome slash learn from Linnea Stentz, the CEO of Gilda's Club Madison. So Linnea, how are you doing today?
So far, so good. Thank you for having
me. I'm excited to have you on because you, I guess, I remember billboards all over town.
Oh, sure.
And I guess I can't say that I've been all over town a whole lot recently to know if you guys still have those billboards. But you guys are essentially what I would consider to be somewhat of a Madison staple. So in the nonprofit world, and that's saying a lot because there's a lot of nonprofits around Madison.
It's true. We have quite a few other folks out there doing some great work.
Yeah. So let's talk first about what is Gilda's Club.
Sure. So Gilda's Club Madison helps families deal with the emotional side of cancer.
All right.
So when you're a child or an adult and you get a cancer diagnosis, it can be one of the toughest times in a person's life.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are a lot of emotions and challenges that go along with that. Sometimes
right.
depression, feelings of isolation, uncertainty about the future. And so what we do is we invite the entire family to become a part of the clubhouse, and they can participate in emotional support groups, cancer education, wellness opportunities, yoga, tai chi, guided relaxation, kids programs, teen support, and individual counseling for a short time. And all of this is offered at completely no cost.
Wow. Now, this was started, I believe, by Gilda Radner. Or she was just a spokesperson. She has something to do with it.
Yeah.
So can you tell us that story?
Sure. Let's go back to ancient history. So
sure.
Gilda Radner. A lot of folks know Gilda Radner was a comedian on Saturday Night Live. She was also a comedian down in Second City, Chicago for many years.
Sure.
And so when she was first diagnosed with ovarian cancer, she and Gene Wilder were on the West Coast. And she was going to a place called the Wellness Community.
Mm-hmm.
She got support there. She met other people who had a cancer diagnosis there. And so when she and Gene moved back to the East Coast, there was really nothing like it.
All right.
And so she found her own psychotherapist, Joanna Bull, who is an absolutely amazing woman. I've had the opportunity to meet her.
Yeah.
And she brought Joanna Bull and other cancer patients into her home. And she had support groups in her
wow.
space. So she obviously felt that this was extremely valuable to her.
Mm-hmm.
And so after she died, Gene Wilder and Mandy Patinkin and Joanna Bull and a bunch of other, SNL friends really created the Gilda's Club in New York City.
Oh.
So as the wellness communities popped up all along the West Coast, Gilda's Club started popping up along the East Coast and then slowly moved toward the Midwest and Canada and some other places. But it was in 2008 the two organizations merged and became the International Cancer Support Community. And so we're an affiliate of them. We're our own 501c3 nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
We do our own thing within certain guidelines and rules that they set for us.
All right.
Yeah.
So Gilda was more or less the inspiration for it.
Exactly.
And she started kind of the way early one, but it wasn't called Gilda's Club until after her passing.
Correct.
Interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. And from a timeline point of view, are we talking late 80s, early 90s, or when did that?
So this was, I believe, the early 2000s.
Early 2000s. Okay. I'm a decade off.
Yeah.
I know Saturday Night Live watching days where Gilda was pre-me. So
oh, yeah.
By a little touch, probably. Probably less than I want to say. But anyways.
Sure.
So how long have you been with them?
So I've been with Gilda's Club Madison for a little over 9 years now.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
It's been an adventure for sure.
So 9 years. Okay. So you've seen quite a bit of stuff.
I have. And actually, people all get to their job, their career, their exciting position in life in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, my path really started way back when, when I was a kid.
Okay.
So the summer that I turned 14,
mm-hmm.
I worked at summer camp.
Okay.
And this is really silly to say, but I'd had an experience in the first couple weeks of working as a camp counselor where one of the kids in my group was kicked by a horse and had a compound fracture. And you're wondering where I'm going with this. But she had a compound fracture and we got her down off the horse and, you know, I'm telling this person to call 911 and telling this person to get this. And, and I had literally had my first aid CPR the week before. So here I am, just 14, had no idea what I was doing previous to this and absolutely took control of the situation. And at that point in my life, I thought, I want to own my own camp. I want to make sure that other campers and other counselors have this amazing, and for me, it was a coming of age experience. It was like I could look at having gone through this experience and knew that I could do just about anything and felt very confident in the path that I could take. So pretty much my whole adult life has been dedicated to nonprofit world. I worked at different summer camps from the time I was 13 until I graduated college. And after college, I did some work doing gang youth tracking and monitoring and doing group counseling in a dual diagnosis facility for kids who had both a mental health diagnosis and a drug addiction issue. And but for me, it was sort of a way to help kids who maybe didn't have that experience that I'd had the chance to have. It was an interesting time in my life, and I would say that there were a number of challenges associated with it, with parents getting out of prison and threatening the staff, and it being a really uncomfortable situation when all you're trying to do is help their kids.
Yeah, you went straight for the one of the hardest things you could do.
Right out of college, that was my path. And of course, in college, they didn't have, you know, nonprofit management like they do now. They didn't have a number of those things. So I kind of cobbled together my own.
Well, this was your own thing.
This was, no. Sorry, I didn't start this. But part of it was is that finding a path to running a nonprofit or owning a nonprofit or, or you know, managing one, is a very different path for a lot of people. That finding that without having any specific education or experience that is geared toward that is a little bit different.
I bet.
So what I decided to do after working with these gang kids and these kids who had addictions is I decided to work for a Big Brothers Big Sisters.
I've been a big.
Me too.
Yeah.
My little sister is awesome and has a little girl of her own.
And very
we're
cool.
We're still in touch a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's an opportunity to catch a kid before they go down that road. And to give them another adult and another perspective on life. So for me, I started out as an outreach coordinator, helping people find us, you know, become mentors and all of that. And it was really at Big Brothers Big Sisters that I had the chance to take my first leadership role.
Within Big Brothers Big Sisters?
Within Big Brothers Big Sisters.
Okay. You're talking locally here?
No, it was Northeast Iowa, so Waterloo, Cedar Falls area.
All right.
Yeah.
Nice. So I guess you had this attraction to helping kids that really had some challenges. Like really had some challenges. You're talking emotional stuff. And drug stuff, and I imagine when you're when you have that mixture, some of the parents maybe aren't really interested in getting them fixed. At least from the experience that I've had. Or fixed is the wrong word. Just giving them
but
help.
But I know what you mean. Finding, you know, to talk to parents and help them understand that this is valuable without it feeling like you're putting upon them or you're demeaning them in some way, when the truth is that a mentor can just open doors. It's the same thing with business mentoring, that you have these opportunities to see life from a different perspective. And, you know, when I was actually in that job, I would say I had my first professional mentor. I was hired by a woman who left after a period of time, and when she left, she said to the board, you know, you should hire Linnea. She's someone that you know, can do this job. She's been here for a number of years. You should give her a shot. And she left, and they didn't choose me, and that was okay at the time. They hired a man named Kevin Volk, who he came in, and we learned shortly thereafter that his predecessor kind of threw a bomb over her shoulder and had not applied for a major grant that funded us a big chunk of our budget. And so there were some things that were missed.
Sure. Oops.
And so he and I really became tag team partners in a way that I've never worked with another boss.
Oh, wow.
So I learned from him, and he learned a lot about the organization from me. And together, we had to approach some challenges like, how do we make our payroll and pay our rent when a third of our budget is gone?
Those are big questions.
Big questions.
That I imagine a lot of business owners, I know myself included, there have been times when you had to figure out stuff like that.
Exactly.
Yeah, nonprofit world, I imagine, is tougher. Because in the business world, you're like, sell.
Oh, yeah.
Hit the phones.
Yeah.
Or hit the streets.
And
nonprofits, you're like, oh.
Oh, yeah. It came down to, you know, negotiating with the building owner. You know, would you allow us to spread this out over a longer period of time?
All right.
And, you know, can we negotiate with the various different utilities and so on and get them to cut costs so that we wouldn't have to reduce? And in the time that I was there, we more than tripled the number of kids we served. So it was one of those things where, in this time of scarcity, and again, it was another thing I learned from Kevin, in this time of scarcity, especially in a nonprofit, you grow.
All right, right.
Because you have to be able to demonstrate that this is a strong enough organization, strong enough mission, that even when everything is attacking you all at once, you have to look at it from the standpoint of this mission matters, the people we serve matter, and we need to keep moving forward as quickly and as strongly as we can.
Right.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
So you solved it.
We did.
At that moment.
We did. And so when he chose to leave the organization, he again suggested to the board that I step in.
Okay.
And the board hired me as the executive director.
Oh, nice.
So in the time I was there 7.5 years. And it was another organization that I loved.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the kids, I enjoyed the mentors, the challenge of moving into new communities and building relationships in new schools and all of the pieces and parts that go into it. I'll also say that on the side during that time, I had a business of my own.
Oh, nice.
Where I was running, of all things, a Renaissance Festival knife throwing concession.
Wow, that is safe to say
different.
This is the first time that job has been mentioned. At all, ever.
Yeah. So in the few years that I was in a leadership role at Big Brothers Big Sisters, I also had this business on the side, and it was funny. I had a board member at the point in time said, "You need to meet our executive director, Linnea, who also throws knives." And he just loved to throw that out when he was introducing me to
funny.
Potential donors and things like
that. Well, that breaks the ice.
Thanks, buddy.
With the sledgehammer or the wrecking ball. So exactly. Just side tangent here.
Yes.
How does one get in the knife throwing business?
So at the time, my partner was, he had had an art degree, and he decided to use his art degree to create leather goods and metal work and a number of other things in the Renaissance setting. And so I was going along with him as a sidekick and selling things. It's not really my gig. I'm
sure.
More of a take charge person. I wanted to have more fun with it.
All right.
And so, I took something that I'd been curious about as a hobby and started throwing. And once we got to the point where I could actually teach people a little bit how to throw, we created a setup where I would be able to have tournaments during the Renaissance Day and give people the chance to learn how to throw a little bit and win some prizes and different things.
All right.
So it was a lot of fun.
That sounds cool. I suppose that's a limited calendar.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's really summer into fall.
Okay.
And so for a big chunk of the year, I was working a 40-hour week job and then working, you know, 20 hours over the weekend doing this outside in a very hot costume and hawking my wares and, you know, calling out to random strangers and really sort of pushing me outside of my comfort zone as a somewhat shy person.
Okay.
It forced me to be a bit more outgoing.
Well, I bet, because you got a carnival bark there.
Oh, yeah, you bet.
Did you have to carnival bark in the little...
in an accent, a terrible accent. Yes, it was a terrible accent.
I just picture Monty Python type stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But I remember the Renaissance fairs or festivals where you'd go there and, man, I could see people having fun.
Oh, yeah. It was a great time in my life.
Yeah.
And so when I chose to leave Big Brothers Big Sisters, it was because I had met my now husband.
Okay.
And so he and I dated long distance for a chunk of time, close to a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided that I would move up to be closer to him. He's a teacher up in Wanakee.
Okay.
And I wanted to leave my organization in better shape than I had found it.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
good plan.
In the last several months I was there, we actually received two major federal grants that would have potentially funded them fully for the next 2 to 3 years.
Wow.
And
well,
so
cool.
When I walked away, rather than throw a bomb over my shoulder, it was, I want you to be stable and set and continue to grow and serve kids and do the great work that they were fantastic at doing.
Sure. Nice.
Yeah.
I imagine they weren't terribly excited to hear that you were leaving.
No, I don't think they were, but I gave them, you know, a big chunk of time mm-hmm. to plan ahead and make sure that they were able to find a good replacement and so on. You know, I moved up here and worked briefly as a grant writer for Easter Seals, and
okay.
I found it boring after being an executive director. Your life is very busy and mm-hmm. full in those roles, and you're constantly interacting with people and, mm-hmm. like I said, building relationships and getting out in the community. And so I moved from Easter Seals to NAMI, Wisconsin, the National Alliance on Mental Illness.
Yeah.
And I was the statewide director for them for a period of time.
Okay.
But while I was there, my mom was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Well, your whole life changes when there are certain things that happen, whether it's, you know, something that inspires you to go into a particular direction or something like this where suddenly work isn't your focus.
Right. Yeah, your priorities change.
Yeah, completely.
Right.
Completely. And she was something of a light in the world. She had a lot of joy.
Mm-hmm.
She loved to dance, and she was a terrible singer, but she sang all the time, usually the wrong lyrics. She was a boogie boarder. She would talk to people in the line at the grocery store. So she was just a person who was always out there in the
sure.
world. And when she was diagnosed, I had just announced I was getting married, and she was going to come in and swoop me up and take me wedding dress shopping.
Uh-huh.
And so she called me right before she was supposed to arrive and said, I'm sorry, my baby, I can't come take you dress shopping because I have to go for chemotherapy on Monday. And this was the first she had told me anything.
At all. Oh, ouch.
So my thought was, well, I guess I'm coming to you then. So I got in a plane. She lived in Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay.
And I flew out there. And while we were there, we wedding dress shop. We also talked about her prognosis, and I met her doctors,
mm-hmm.
and she never really said the word cancer the entire time that she was sick.
Okay.
She talked about the thing in her pancreas, she really struggled a
okay.
lot with it. Very emotional, having a hard time dealing with just day-to-day life. And I'm the youngest of five, but I am a caregiver.
All right.
And so I inserted myself as much as she would let me.
Sure.
She would only let us stay there for a little while.
All right.
And so during this time, I was going out there pretty often, I think 7 times in the 18 months she was sick. And she let me stay for a couple weeks at a time.
Well, that's cool.
And yeah, it was really a time for us to mend any fences that we needed to mend. And
mm-hmm.
we talked a lot about end-of-life choices. And really, it was kind of a beautiful, awful time,
right?
If that makes sense.
Totally. Was
yeah.
she, at this time, in the hospital all the time?
In and out.
So a lot of it, she was at home?
Yeah.
Okay.
She was sent to rehabilitation when she was having some falls. And she struggled quite a bit. I remember one of the times I went out there, she said to me, you need to take me to get my driver's license renewed. I'm like, why? You shouldn't be driving. You've lost half your body weight. This is a bad idea.
Right.
And she said to me, well, I need to vote. I'm like, okay, cool.
Right.
We need to get you your license. We'll get you to vote. And she dressed up in this little blue pantsuit, and she put on a wig. It was one of the few times after she lost all her hair that I saw her in a wig.
Mm-hmm.
And just to give you an idea of who my mom is, we walked into the DMV and I turned to her, I said, "You look like a flapper." And my mom started to dance the Charleston in the DMV.
Nice.
She was just, she stayed herself throughout the whole illness.
Very cool.
And so it was toward the end of her life that someone had mentioned to me that Gilda's Club was looking for an executive director.
Oh.
And, you know, here I am dealing with this really tough illness,
mm-hmm.
and understanding what exactly it's like to be a child of someone in the throes of it and knowing that they're not going to be with us much longer.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of grief and a lot of acceptance that goes into that.
Mm-hmm.
And so finding out about Gilda's, when, you know, part of my job in my mom's life was to make her laugh almost
okay.
every day.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that this place is named after Gilda Radner,
mm-hmm.
you know, it spoke to me. And so after my fifth interview, you know, there's always a process. Yeah, there's always a process.
So there's a little bureaucracy, okay.
They want to make sure they had the right person.
I get it.
I think. But after the fifth interview and they offered it, it felt like I was in the right place at the right time, and the mission spoke to me in the same way that Big Brothers had spoken to me at the time when I'd stepped into that role.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just being in a different place in your life and having gone through what I was going through with my mom, I thought, well, this is something that I can do so that people don't feel as lonely and frustrated and confused as I know she felt during mm-hmm. that time.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
So it's kind of interesting how the jobs essentially found you to a point as you were wherever you were at in your life.
Absolutely.
That is, and the times that you stayed there, I've looked at a lot of resumes, and people don't stay at jobs for, I don't know, more than 2 weeks.
Some of the resumes, that 2 year mark where people say, I don't want to look like a job hopper, but no.
Yeah.
No, I landed in the right place. It's been, you know, we've had our share of challenges as an organization.
I bet. I know about the flood.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know. I've been in Madison 20-ish years. So I don't, how long ago was the flood? 5 years, something like
that? So that was in 2018.
Okay.
I'll go back to 2012 and I'll say.
Oh, there's more.
In 2012, I told you we're part of this international organization called the Cancer Support Community.
Mm-hmm.
At that point in time, there was nothing official, but there was some scuttlebutt at the national organization that they were going to be asking all of the affiliates to become cancer support communities.
Okay.
So.
What does that mean?
Well, we had a brand that had three names.
Okay.
So the Cancer Support Community, the Wellness Community, and Gilda's Club were all one national group.
Okay.
But it's tough. Branding is difficult when you're dealing with multiple names.
It's expensive.
Yeah, that mm-hmm. too. So all the wellness communities were making the change to Cancer Support Community, and one of the Gilda's Clubs had made the change. And at that point in time in 2012, there was a Gilda's Club in Milwaukee that mm-hmm. was making that change too.
Mm-hmm.
So they made the change, and then they had flooding and they closed permanently.
In Milwaukee,
okay. Secondary flood. And so they closed, and we had decided at that time, you know, our staff and our board were really reluctant. They didn't want to change from Gilda's Club. There was a lot of love for the name and the story and Gilda. But there was also that idea of, here we are, this brand,
mm-hmm.
that it's hard to wrap your head around,
you know, what you do.
What you do. And right. a lot of people would say that they didn't know Gilda and all of that.
Sure.
So the board had some tough discussions and the staff had some tough discussions, and we came together and decided, yeah, we're going to make the change to Cancer Support Community.
You did decide?
We did.
All right.
So I had an interview at that point in time with the State Journal, and the interview was 100% correct factual information.
Okay.
The headline was not.
Oh.
The headline spun international in 24 hours.
Oh.
I had angry phone calls from thousands of people from France, from all kinds of places, that they thought we were forgetting Gilda. And that was not the intention at all.
Right.
So, you know, I'm the kind of person, when I'm stressed, I eat. You know, okay. It's what you do. This was the one time in my life where the stress made me not able to eat anything or keep anything down at all.
Well, it sounds like you were on the phone a lot.
Oh, yes. A lot of anger. And, you know, as a nonprofit, you have this thing where you don't know if donors are going to abandon you because of a change like this. You don't know if, you know, people are not going to come through your doors because they're unhappy with the change. And so we went to our national organization, said we want to keep our name.
All right.
It took them a month to decide. And so for a month, for a month, I stewed on this and we dealt with the anger and the frustration.
Yeah.
You know, one of the benefits that came from it is that our current board chair actually reached out to me. He's he has his own PR company and he reached out and said, you guys are making a mistake.
By changing.
And I said, oh, by changing.
I agree.
Said, well, then help me. And he jumped in with both feet and became a big volunteer on our PR committee and very active with us and then joined the board and then became our board chair. But during that time, you know, being able to navigate those waters was tough.
I bet.
So when we decided to keep the name, we were able to finally get the agreement from the national office that yes, you keep the name. It's fabulous. We were able to work with Adams Outdoor to do the big billboard campaign that you have seen.
All right.
So they had nine.
That's what that campaign was for?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Really?
It was to remind people that we were still Gilda's Club.
All right.
And it was what we called a curiosity campaign, that people at the time didn't necessarily know what Gilda's Club was. And on a billboard, you get seconds for people to read it. So we needed something that was interesting or weird enough that would make people go, you know, tap in their cell phone, you know, what is this Gilda's Club place? So there was a little touch of something about cancer. I think one was, you know, if I have one more MRI, I'll stick to the fridge. Or one was, you know, when do I get my chemo superpowers? And there were these oddball. Yeah, but again, it was that little bit of humor to infuse Gilda and to have that make people go find out more about us.
Right.
So the billboard campaign, because we were the first big partner with Adams Outdoor, they started a new way of dealing with their nonprofits. We were really the first. And so we had nine boards with them that stayed up for close to 18 months at completely no cost. I mean,
no cost.
There's no way that we could have done it.
I was just going to say you had to spend hundreds of thousands
on that.
That's
exactly right. That's exactly right.
All right.
It would have been close to a third of our annual budget for us to host that campaign if they hadn't fully donated to us.
Interesting. Okay.
So it was a huge blessing for the organization.
Mm-hmm.
So we took this awful situation that was a lot of negative press, and I'll say my board chair at the time, Wayne Harris, was amazing to work with. He kept saying, it'll be fish wrap in the morning.
Right.
And, you know, very, very positive that this will pass. But we took this negative press, and we managed to turn it into awareness.
Doesn't hurt. No such thing as bad news.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. So the stress that I went through, that's okay. It's all water under the bridge. We made it through.
You chalk it up to experience and move on. Right?
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of water under the bridge, you mentioned the flood.
Yeah.
So we ran along. You know, we the billboard campaign that we did raised the number of people who are walking through our door on a monthly basis. So we had 20 to 25 people every month coming through our doors as new members, someone who has cancer or someone who loves someone with cancer. And by the end of the billboard campaign, we were seeing between 60 and 65 people every month joining.
So you between double and triple there. Okay.
It was huge. So we got to this point where we were seeing this huge influx of people that were finding us. And we had the flood happen. And 500,000 gallons of water poured into our 15,000-foot clubhouse.
Wow.
Doing $1.3 million in damages.
All right. So I want to back up for one step, though.
Sure.
You guys moved. So that was a newer building,
right? We did not.
You did not?
So the clubhouse opened in 2008.
Okay.
And so it was
where were 2018. Okay. Where were you before 2008?
Cahill, Maine.
Okay.
So it was, we weren't doing any service provision at that time. So Cahill, Maine was where they had an office so that they could raise the money to build the building and design it and do all of that work.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the doors opened in 2008, and then 10 years later, mm-hmm. we had this big blowout 10-year anniversary celebration. Mm-hmm. We honored Barry and Cindy Alvarez because they were a big part of us raising the dollars to open the clubhouse in the first place. Mm-hmm. And so we had this big blowout celebration for them. And then 2 months later, this huge flood hits. And there's no way that we could safely continue to do program provision in the clubhouse because mm-hmm. the basement had, you know, 8 feet of water in it. There's no way.
Right. 8 feet.
8 feet of water.
But you got a nice pool.
Yeah, right? Put the spa in the back. It'll be great. We have great partners, though.
All right.
So what we were able to do at that time is our partner Exact Sciences opened their doors to us and offered us donated office space. So we moved all our staff into there. We had 13 different locations around the community that offered space for support groups and yoga and all the different programs that we do. Mm-hmm. So my staff rolled with it.
They totally
rolled with it. I have to say that my program staff and our fundraisers and everybody that we had at that point in time took this more in stride than I ever could have guessed. Mm-hmm. Our members, you know, they still continued to join Gildo's Club, but they never saw the clubhouse until, you know, 9 months later.
Wow. 9 months?
9 months we were closed, yeah.
Wow.
So everything was off-site during that time. And, you know, we had flood insurance. We're not technically in a floodplain. We had flood insurance, though.
I was just going to ask.
Yeah, I know.
For the people that aren't familiar with this, this is a huge rain that happened.
Oh, yeah.
But Costco flooded.
Oh, yeah.
There's a bunch of new buildings in that, what I would consider to be an industrial park. Then I'm like, you didn't just have an inch or two of water. You had feet of water.
Yes.
How did that happen? Like, how did that physically happen? Then it does happen, you have 8 feet of water in your basement. You had nowhere to pump it because you're surrounded by water.
Exactly.
You're essentially in the middle of a lake that just appeared.
Not only that, but there was no one locally who could pump it because so many other people needed it.
Yeah.
Needed services. So we had someone coming in from Wausau to pump it. But as far as how it happened, at the time, we had a window well into our kids' support area in the basement. Mm-hmm. And there was so much water and the flash flood was so fast and so intense that the window broke in and the water was pouring in through this window.
Wow.
And there were two windows and there was just a number of areas and the water table rose so quickly it was coming up from below too. So we had had minor flooding before. You know, I'm talking an inch of water in the basement. Oh, okay. you bring in some group to suck it up and you know, dry out the rugs. Okay, not a big deal. Mm-hmm. But we had flood insurance because there was this history of these minor floods. Mm-hmm. So when the time happened, and you know, we had $1 million in flood insurance, $1.3 million in damages. Here we are, a nonprofit. Luckily, we have great people, amazing board members who put up these, you know, match goals. Like we had a board member, Joyce, who said, I'll donate $25,000 if you can match it. And so all of these amazing people put together this process for us where the staff and our major donors and our board mm-hmm. were able to raise, you know, several hundred thousand dollars to meet the deductible of the insurance and then also to replace all of the things that were lost in the flood. We had a gym in the basement where it was this amazing workout equipment that was completely lost. All of our kids program stuff was lost, furniture, just a number of different things.
Wow.
So it was taken down to concrete and studs. And
8 feet of water will do that.
8 feet of water will do that. It's amazing how that works.
All right.
But we came back from it.
All right.
And it was almost a year to the day when COVID hit. We moved back in the clubhouse. Yeah, seriously.
We're good.
Exactly.
Wait, what?
We'll be fine. We moved back in the clubhouse. We had a grand reopening, and we're, you know, building our membership again. People are finding us. People who are dealing with cancer are walking through our doors. Mm-hmm. And then COVID hits, and my program director, Kirsten, and I looked at each other and said, okay, how can we do this?
Sure. Here we go again.
We had just, you know, we've done different things, but doing it off-site isn't going to work this time. Mm-hmm. You know, we know that people who are in active cancer treatment now we know that if they contract COVID, they have usually a 20 to 28% mortality rate. So we're talking about a high-risk population. Mm-hmm. We can't continue doing what we're doing.
Right.
So we had just started using Zoom for some of our educational sessions, getting mm-hmm. it out on the web so we could share it with members who live too far to come. Mm-hmm. And so from a Thursday, when she and I had a conversation, to the following Monday, we shifted all of our programming except our kids' programming to Zoom.
Wow. Okay.
And so we are still doing everything that we did. We've added back the kids' programming, a little bit different format. It's not quite as therapeutic. It's more community building, socializing,
mm-hmm. okay.
Stress reduction, mm-hmm. some of that. But we have everything virtual right now, and the board actually has set a decree that we're not going to reopen for in-person programming until after August 1st.
Okay.
So, of course, we're watching community numbers on COVID and, mm-hmm. you know, what's going on. And then we have to figure out how we're going to ease people back in safely.
Right.
So we're talking about some outdoor programming late summer.
Okay.
And, it's safer. Mm-hmm. You know, the decree by CDC saying you don't have to wear masks outside and all of that mm-hmm. Will keep our members safer. But it's still a challenge, especially with the folks we serve.
The volume of people that you're reaching out to every month, has that mm-hmm. changed or is that maintained?
Has it's it gone down. It's gone down.
Okay.
So with the virtual programming, we're seeing closer to 20-ish new people coming and joining us every month. Mm-hmm. So we're back to that pre-billboard day.
Right.
But I think that will ramp up again pretty quickly once we're back in the clubhouse. You know, people who are dealing with COVID right now, mm-hmm. have a better understanding of what it's like to feel really isolated.
Yes.
You know, you don't get to spend time with your friends and family. You're not going out in public and going to clubs and, you know, goofing off as much as what you were. But when someone's diagnosed with cancer, they go through that same kind of isolation because you're told, don't go out, don't see your friends and family, especially if you're immunocompromised. You just don't do those things.
Right.
So part of why Gilda's Club exists is so that people can come together and learn from each other and participate in things, feeling like they have, first of all, someone who understands them.
Right.
But then second of all, that they're not alone.
Mm.
I'll give you the little bit of background as
sure.
far as psychosocial support is what they call it.
All right.
So you're supporting someone psychologically, you're supporting someone socially. And what they've found in various different studies is that people who get support through their cancer journey tend to have better cancer treatment outcomes, mm-hmm. tend to live longer, have fewer cancer occurrences, have better quality of life, have lower cost of care.
All right.
So when you talk about, okay, well, why should I go to Gilda's Club? Well, you may not want to sit in a circle and talk about your feelings. Not everybody's into support groups.
Sure.
But going for a counseling session, going for yoga, going for even cooking and nutrition classes to learn how to eat healthfully
right.
when you're dealing with cancer is a tough deal because things taste different with chemotherapy.
I bet.
You know, so yeah. finding ways to come together and not be on your own is really valuable.
I can totally see that. I'm wondering, the remote thing, has there been similar positive consequences, we'll call it, from doing stuff remote as much as there has been from doing stuff in person?
Sure. So I'll say that we have a couple of silver linings that have come from the remote shift.
Mm-hmm.
We have members who are joining from outside of Dane County in greater numbers than we ever would have expected.
All right.
So whether someone's joining from Milwaukee or Marshfield further out, mm-hmm. they can now participate in the virtual support, even though they wouldn't be able to leave work and make it to a 6 o'clock support group. They can Zoom in
sure.
and participate and be a part of it. And so with people becoming more used to using, you know, the virtual meetings,
mm-hmm.
We will probably never completely get rid of them.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're talking about hybrid programming moving forward so that whether someone lives far enough away that they can't make it, or if someone's feeling so sick that they don't want to leave home,
mm-hmm.
you know, you get to the point my mom, for example.
Yeah.
You get to the point where you don't feel like eating anything, you don't feel like leaving the house, mm-hmm. and you don't want to face anything.
All right.
But you still have all the feelings that you're going through of the grief and the loss and the stress and everything else, mm-hmm. that you have the opportunity with Gilda's Club through this virtual support to be able to get some of that out and feel some relief from that. Yeah.
All right. How do cancer patients or their families find you? How do they know you exist?
People can find us on our website, okay. and there's actually a piece of our site that walks people through the membership process.
Okay.
So I mentioned everything at Gilda's Club is free. The membership is also free, mm-hmm. but when people want to become members, they reach out to us by our contact us part of our website. They can email program@gildasclubmedicine.org. They can call us 828-8880. And what they can do is they'll go through a new member meeting, mm-hmm. where they'll learn about all the things that are available to them.
All right.
And, you know, it's funny. We have a budget of about $850,000.
All right.
And we managed to make it free for anyone, everyone who walks through, by hosting major fundraisers every year. Nice. You're going to think I'm nuts. But one of our fundraisers I'm doing this year, okay. is Over the Edge. It's an urban rappelling event.
All right.
Where people raise $1,000 and then they rappel 14 stories down the Hilton Madison Monona Terrace.
14 stories?
14 stories. So
that's a healthy level.
It's very exciting. I did it in 2019, and I'm in the process of fundraising to reach that $1,000 goal now.
Right.
But not everyone is super excited. But if you're talking about wanting to feel alive, whether you're a cancer survivor and you just got past this, or you're in a point in your life where you just want to re-embrace the excitement in your life,
mm-hmm.
getting... This sounds, again, sounds really silly. Getting your butt out over the edge of that building for the first time,
yeah.
and looking down,
right,
is exhilarating. Absolutely exhilarating.
I just feel like I don't have cancer, but I'm looking forward to a heart attack. This is wow. All right.
Yeah. So we have about 75 people who'll be doing that with us August 15th.
Wow.
And it's one of our major funders. We do a golf outing. We do a run walk. We have usually a backyard barbecue, but that event was canceled this year because of COVID.
Sure. So. That's almost 10% of your budget from people rappelling down a building.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
It's a big chunk of it.
Holy cow.
The hope is that, you know, this event will continue to grow, and we're super excited that, you know, we have a couple of celebrities going over this year. And
all right.
Just trying to...
Local celebrities? Or
yeah,
okay.
yeah. But just trying to... raise awareness of the event so that more people want to join in the future and
right.
get involved with it.
Huh.
Yeah.
So who... I'm just trying to figure out logistics.
Yeah.
Like Madison sometimes is a little stickler on stuff. Mm-hmm. So I imagine just getting approval for that was probably challenging. Or did you just tell me you're washing windows?
It was, so we work with a global organization that's called Over the Edge, and they do this in different locations all around the U.S. and Canada and outside of there. They've done this thousands of times. And so
as a
fundraiser for different nonprofits.
Okay.
And so we work with them under a contract where we're the only group within 50 miles that can do this event.
Nice.
So they come in, and again, they're the experts.
Mm-hmm.
People have the opportunity, they can volunteer with us to be a ropes volunteer, and the experts will train them and walk them through it and supervise them.
Okay.
And those volunteers also get to rappel down the building, which is amazing.
Hold this rope.
You want a volunteer opportunity that is not going to be forgotten anytime soon, that is it.
All right.
People can come out and participate in that, and you know, for some folks, they just donate $1,000 and they rappel. For some folks, they put it out and they raise dollars, $5 here, $10 there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a lot of fun.
It sounds like it.
Yeah.
That's cool. So I guess for the people at home that are wondering, how do they get involved with something like that?
So we have an event website that's overtheedgemadison.com.
Okay.
And if they go to that site, they can sign up right there. If they want to just support our efforts, You look for my name, I'm fundraising on there. I have to raise $1,000, same as everybody else.
Right.
So what I had said to my friends and family, because I rappelled in 2019, I said, I'd love to rappel again. It was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone who donates to me over $25, I'm putting into a drawing for August 1st.
Oh.
So they would have the chance to rappel in my place. If that, I will only be drawing one name. If they say no,
yeah,
because they live too far away or they're not interested or they're too afraid,
sure,
I'll rappel again. But I am going to be doing that as a little personal giveaway for my own.
Nice. That's clever.
Yeah, different.
That's clever. Do you still do the knife throwing thing?
I occasionally do throw knives still. I don't work Renaissance festivals anymore, but, you know, people need a way to blow off steam. And so for me, a lot of times it's creative.
Mm-hmm.
I do stained glass work. During the pandemic, I have made myself a 1550s Tudor style gown that I'll be wearing to Renaissance festivals in the future to then go throw knives at their booths and
wow,
surprise the people that this random person can actually do it.
Funny. I'm going to pretend I know what that is.
Oh, yeah.
1550s oh, yeah, Tudor style,
yeah, right,
James.
Clearly, it's
like
a thing.
I have t-shirts and jeans.
Yeah.
That's kind of the extent of my fashion sense.
Yeah.
So. All right.
But we all have our little geekiness. And,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm someone who traditionally, I don't lose sleep over my jobs. I've gotten
no, it's
to the
no good
point,
if you do.
No, no. I've
You're
gotten to the
wrong
point where
mm-hmm,
I know that we can get through just about anything.
Right.
And it's that piece of resilience where you look at your life and you think, I know I'm in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm doing good work. I know that we can get through all of the hurdles that are put in our way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good feeling. It's a really good feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like to tell people when I'm coaching them,
yeah,
that you are never given a challenge or an obstacle that, let's just call it, the universe does not expect you to be able to overcome. Now, you'll never get a challenge that you don't have the ability to overcome. That doesn't necessarily mean that you will, but to believe that you will, that's usually enough.
Oh, yeah.
Certainly you gotta take a little action to make sure it happens, but...
Well, sure, you get to learn a lot along the way. I had
totally
no idea that I would learn so much about, you know, restoration of a building as I had to learn after our flood.
Yeah.
But it's amazing what you can take away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I worked with a fantastic volunteer after the flood, pre-COVID, to talk about business continuity planning.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how you can look 15 steps down the road and say, what are the worst case scenarios?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what could we be hit with that we're not expecting yet? And it's amazing what a stress relief that can be too,
mm-hmm,
for someone who is in charge of an organization or running their own business.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you always have to be looking for options or obstacles.
Oh, yeah.
Or just be prepared. I don't know if a ton of people were necessarily prepared for the pandemic, or at least not for the term that it's been.
No, and it's been such a long period of time. I think that people have gotten to the point that they're just about ready for it to be over, whether it's over or not.
Oh, maybe past just about.
Oh, yeah.
At least
yeah,
on my end. I'm like, we're good.
Oh, yeah. And
yeah,
I'm vaccinated. And for me, that was also a relief.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my hope is that as we're looking at Gilda's Club and looking at bringing people back safely,
mm-hmm,
you know, the staff are vaccinated. How many of our members will be eligible for vaccination? Because, again, there are some things with being immunocompromised that might make it not eligible.
Right.
But trying to bring them back safely, securely, help them feel comfortable. We sent out a survey this last week to ask our members, you know, do you feel comfortable and safe coming back?
Mm.
And it was a third, a third, and a third. It was a third saying, heck yes, a third saying, absolutely not. And the third hedging their bets. Well, if you do these things, we'd want to come back.
Interesting.
But it's a tough road to go.
Yeah, it's interesting when I look at businesses, a lot of restaurants or anything where a crowd mm-hmm is gathered. They have a challenge.
Oh yeah.
Right, because there's going to be some people I imagine that are more like me that are just like, we're cool, we'll figure it out. And there's others that are just like, I'm afraid to pick up my toothbrush in the morning. Who knows what was on there at night, right? And there's other people just like, as long as we put an excessive amount of safety things in there, it'll make me feel better.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Well, it's just like our golf outing. You know, last year we hosted our golf outing. Golf is considered one of the safest things that you can do during the pandemic because of, you know, you're outside, you're not in close contact with a whole lot of people.
Sure.
You're enjoying yourself. And so we hosted the golf outing, but then the reception was virtual. This year I'm really hoping that we can move it back toward being an in-person reception.
Yeah.
Our golf outing is known as the best tasting round of golf because we have restaurant tastings and vendor tastings all around the holes.
Clever.
So it's fun. If someone's a foodie but not a big golfer, it's a best ball event, first of all. And second of all, you're going to be full and enjoying the heck out of adult beverages and different food tastings around the holes. So
very
it's a good
cool.
time.
The whole point of golf, right?
Yeah, exactly. So. It's a good time.
Interesting. So, Linnea, how can people find you?
So go to GildasClubMadison.org. That's probably the easiest way.
Okay.
Emailing info@GildasClubMadison.org is another way. And then our main phone number is 608-828-8880.
Awesome. And then if you could give a piece of advice to someone that was considering either getting involved in the nonprofit world or just a chunk of advice, maybe even if it's not that specific, that you've learned over the course of all these years, what would you suggest to people as that advice?
I would say that I've heard people over the years say, just take the job. It doesn't matter if it feeds your soul. It's just a job. Mm. It pays you and you can go do the fun things that you want to do outside of work. Mm-hmm. But we spend so many hours working.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all a big chunk of your life that you're giving your time to.
Yeah, especially when you think of your awake life.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so if you have the opportunity to do something that matters, that feeds your soul, that you can be really proud of and get excited about, nonprofit work can give you that.
All right.
And it's an opportunity to change lives that you may not get in very many other industries.
That is fair. That is fair. Unless you're an employee for Calls on Call, then
totally. Right.
We're changing the world. It's all good. Awesome. Well, Linnea, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
This has been cool. You have opened my eyes to, I guess, one, what Gilda's Club did or does, because that alone, I wasn't sure. I knew it had to do with cancer, but so I had to admit ignorance there as far as that goes. And it's interesting, you have so much going on. The fundraising world, like with my, I'll call it small involvement with Big Brothers Big Sisters, I would almost consider that a constant battle.
Oh, yeah.
You're constantly trying to raise money to keep this good thing going and keep the momentum going. So it can be a challenge.
It really can.
So to take that on and take it on for 9 years... on top of the stuff that you already did before, glutton for punishment, but it's cool. I think Gilda's Club is lucky to have you.
Thank you, and I absolutely love it. I couldn't imagine a better place to be.
Yeah, that's cool. You guys certainly made the right move with the name. Like that other name, that sounds like the most generic thing in the world.
You know, it's a great organization. Cancer Support Community is a fantastic group, and I'm proud to be an affiliate of them.
Sure.
But I am glad that we kept the name.
Yeah, it just, I guess to me, the name sounds like something broader than an actual group. So yeah, Gilda's Club, that's your niche, man. I like it. I love it. Well, thank you so much for listening. I should let you guys know that Authentic Business Adventures is brought to you by Calls on Call, offering call answering services to small businesses across the country on the web at callsoncall.com. Draw In Customers Business Coaching, offering business coaching services to businesses looking for growth on the web at drawincustomers.com. And of course, the Bold Business Book, a book for the entrepreneur and all of us, available wherever fine books are sold. We'd like to thank you, our wonderful listeners and viewers, as well as our guest, Linnea Stenz, the CEO of Gilda's Club Madison. Linnea, thank you so much. Can you tell us one more time how people can find you?
Yep. GildasClubMadison.org or 828-8880. 608-828-8880.
Awesome. I love it. Thank you so much for visiting us. We will see you next week. I want you to stay awesome. And if you do nothing else, enjoy your business.